SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Scumbags!
Rage!
Sports Rage with Gabe Morenci.
Rage all you want.
Let's roll. Level two is done. Thanks to Jason B. Tackafin for kicking it with us. Thanks to Mo Khan for throwing it down with us in level one. We've got Ian Cameron, a.k.a. Babano, throwing it down with us in the nightcap here, level three. And speaking of nightcaps, we've got a bunch of Women's World Cup soccer games going on this evening, and it's a tricky handicap. So let's start off with Costa Rica and Zambia. Costa Rica plus 210, draw plus 260, Zambia plus 120. Both teams have been eliminated. So both these teams are playing for pride, which they will play hard for. Right, they're going to want to get a win, right? It's an accomplishment to win a World Cup match. They're going to want to get a win, but there are zero ramifications for this game. You could argue that the over is probably to play if there's zero ramifications, but I'm not so sure, and I don't know. Costa Rica and Zambia women, a meaningless game. Like, I bet a lot of this stuff, and I haven't tapped out, but I'm not betting every game anymore. I'll tell you that. I got burnt on a big play the other night with Sweden and Italy. It really screwed me over. I put together like one of those, like, you know what? I'm putting together like a 14 banger here, and I did, and the only one that lost, Sweden just wouldn't stop scoring, man. Right? Sweden wouldn't stop scoring on Italy. I bet on Sweden, thank God. The totals, you know, like I said, this tournament is whacked. So Costa Rica, Zambia, I'm not betting it, man. All right, it's a meaningless game. I don't know. Spain and Japan is not a meaningless game. It's pretty crazy. They're both 2-0. Spain have outscored their opponents 8-0. Japan have outscored their opponents 7-0. So I guess if it was a draw, Spain would advance because they've scored one more goal. But I don't think they're going to, you know, like we said earlier about Team Canada talking about not playing for a draw, because if you play, they basically, you're playing for a draw, you're playing to lose. So Spain are minus 125. The draw is plus 240. Japan are plus 375. Japan are pretty good, but Spain are better. Spain are elite. Like, Spain can win this thing. I'm not sure they will, but they could. Anyone that's watched Spain, Hermosa's impossible to stop. They're good. They're a good team, Spain. But I thought Germany were good, too. They lost to Colombia today. But I think Spain will beat Japan. Canada, Australia, this one's also complicated in a sense in this group. Ireland are already eliminated, but you know those girls are going to play hard no matter what. Nigeria, Canada, and Australia are all sort of in this, like, you know, they're bunched up together here. Canada can advance just with a draw tonight. Australia need the win. So Australia need the win, Canada need the draw, which I think could backfire on Australia. Let's say it's tied in the 75th minute or something, and Australia is going to start, like, panicking, right? They know, listen, a draw is not good for us in 90 minutes. We need the 3 points. So they're going to start pressing, and, you know, when teams press, they either score, or we all know what happens, they get beat down on the counterattack and get scored on. I think Canada can beat them. We should know that Sam Kerr is playing. The Late Night Anger Management Class, this is Sports Rage. I am Gabe Morenci. The pips, the players, the hustlers, the people above us, and everybody else in between. Countdown to kickoff continues, except now it's getting real. And think about it. How many times have you heard me say countdown to kickoff is on over the last, like, month and a half or so? But I vividly remember saying, yeah, countdown is on 50 days. Countdown is on 35 days. Well, here we are. It's this Thursday. So, you know, the old dog days of summer didn't exist this year, did they? This summer has really flown by, and training camps are open for business. It's the bodies are already, let the bodies hit the floor. Jalen Ramsey out for the year already. The Seattle Seahawks had a bad day today. Both their young star running backs got hurt. We know about the Joe Burrow situation. Now Jonathan Taylor says he's hurt. The Colts say that he got hurt in non-football related activities. He says otherwise. He also says he wants to be traded. As the Indianapolis Colts season is imploding before it's even begun, the Indianapolis Colts win total is 6.5. And I got to be honest with you, I don't think they were going to be able to win 7 games even if Jonathan Taylor was happy. And clearly he is not. He wants to be traded. Is he going to hold out? Probably not. But now he says he's hurt, which I can understand the Colts not believing. Like, full disclosure. Listen, man, we can make out the Colts to be the bad guy. It is what it is. Like Ursay said, I didn't make the CBA. You guys did, right? The Players Association did. So, but you can also argue that now that Snyder's out of the league, that Ursay is going to be the new crazy dude here. And I think he already kind of is. And Ursay seems like a nice enough dude in real life, but he also seems kind of crazy when it comes to running his football team as well. They've got Gardner Minshew at quarterback. They've got Anthony Richardson at quarterback. Their win total is 6.5. I don't see how this football team is going to win 7 games this year, even playing in a division that they do, and even having the somewhat manageable schedule that they have. So we've had a bunch of blockbuster baseball deals that continue to get stockpiled here. Max Scherzer, it's hard to remain, between Scherzer and Verlander. But I wouldn't be surprised if Verlander gets dealt to Texas now, too. Why not? Everybody else is. The Angels, they're not, like, throwing in the towel. I think the Angels are going to set a record. Most players used and injured in the Major League Baseball season. The Late Night Anger Management Class, this is Sports Rage. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Late Night Anger Management Class continues. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morency. Let's bring in Ian Cameron, AK Babano, joining us on Sirius XM Channel 159 Sports Grid Radio Networks. Countdown to kickoff is on. NFL preseason starts this Thursday night with the Cleveland Browns and the New York Jets. Let's talk NFL, college football, CFL football. We had a wild ending tonight's CFL game in Montreal. Calgary and Montreal, we spoke a lot throughout the week of the Calgary Stampeders historically struggling in Montreal, make it 0-7 now against the spread. Their last 7 trips to the MTL. Let's bring in Ian Cameron, AK Babano. Babano, always good. How you doing tonight?
Yeah, well, that game was very disappointing on my side. There's a lot about the over. It was there for the taking, and unfortunately, just, you know, bad red zone, just bad ability of by both teams to finish drives. There was only one touchdown all game, and it was the pick six thrown by Jake Mayer, a defensive touchdown for the Montreal Alouettes. But that's going to cost you eventually when you're trying to cash an over, when you have so many drives that end up stalling and resulting in only field goals. And that's what ended up happening. But I come out of that game thinking neither of those teams are really all that great. I mean, it's obviously now we know not the same Calgary. Over and over, they had chances to win that game, and they couldn't. And then there's Montreal with plus 3 turnover margin on their side and a pick 6 on their side. And there they were still hanging on by their fingernails to win that game at the end. They should have put that game away comfortably. So these are two teams I'm not in a rush to back move anytime soon.
Well, I covered a ticket tonight with the Montreal Alouettes, so I'm willing to back them in the future once again. Alouettes now 3-3, playing a very difficult schedule. I've been saying it all year. Montreal aren't a great team. They're not a terrible team, but they're good in certain spots, and they are a good home team. And Calgary never win in Montreal. Calgary are now 2-12 ATS the last 14 games against the Montreal Alouettes. There's certain rivalries in the CFL in which history repeats itself continuously, and Calgary and Montreal is one of them, and it's just something that we're not going to ever get in front of. You know, you look at this week in the CFL, there were a lot of one-sided football games. There was really only one close game, and that was the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Ottawa Red Blacks, in which one of the strangest endings to a football game that I've ever seen. And you want to talk about just, like, you know, horrible play calling, first off. Like, just basically, like, if you're Ottawa, I don't know how the hell you don't win that football game. You got first and goal on the 4-yard line. It was very San Francisco-Baltimore from the Super Bowl years ago. You know, they come all the way down the field. They're the first down. Then the play calling is terrible. They don't score. And then somehow the Hamilton Tiger Cats managed to get Bo Levi Mitchell killed while trying to run the clock out at the end of the game. Strange a football game. Ottawa ran out of luck. That was horrible play calling. Hamilton escapes. Like, if you want to talk about two teams that aren't, quite frankly, very good, like, that was one of the ugliest wins in the history of football, what happened on Friday with Hamilton.
It was. I mean, and certainly the fan base, when they saw Bo get injured at the end of the game, it almost felt like they lost the game. Like, there was really no celebration in the victory. And first of all, the victory wasn't really that impressive to begin with, you know. But and so it was an ugly win. So that's not anything to jump up and down and get excited about. And then you see your quarterback get injured on a meaningless play to run out the clock at the end of the game. Now, from what I've read and heard, this was, and everyone's been blaming the coaching staff, including me. Like, I initially said, what's going on? How could Orlando Steinauer and his staff allow this to happen? Well, we're finding out now the last 24 hours that Bo Levi Mitchell, and this goes back to his days in Calgary, he insists on, in these late game situations when it's victory formation, he's the guy taking the knee, in the victory formation. He's the guy on the field when there's getting the victory sealed down. So that's why he was on the field and not a backup. Okay, I get that. Apparently, the coaching staff told Bo, you know, kneel down, you know, and Bo didn't. He decided to do the quarterback sneak instead. The reason I think he did it is because they were so close to the goal line that he didn't want to risk, you know, getting tackled in the end zone. Maybe there's a fumble there and Ottawa to get a miraculous. Reminds me of Buffalo, Minnesota, Gabe. Remember the Vikings-Bills game last year? There was a very similar situation. The Bills were trying to get the ball just outside their own end zone, and then the fumble happened, and the Vikings recovered. This was the similar situation that we saw at the end of that Hamilton-Ottawa game, where I think Bo was thinking, look, if I take a knee, it's going to be in the end zone here, and it's a safety. Or I could maybe fumble the ball, and they recover. So to be safe, he just wanted to make sure the ball was outside the end zone. That's why he did quarterback sneak. But unfortunately, it led to the injury that's going to keep him out now for another six games. But the good news is it's not season ending. The Ticats do think he'll be back late September. But very, very unfortunate to see what's happened for Bo Levi Mitchell this season. Two different stints now on the injured list.
If you look at Bo Levi Mitchell and you look at the Calgary Stampeders, I think if they could both go back in time, they would probably they probably would have stayed together and they both would have been better off. But we can't hit the rewind button in this world. So in a sense, you know what I mean? We're starting to get into a groove here right now. I mean, teams are starting to become who they are. Bill Parcells once famously said, you are what your record says you are. That was after eight football games. We know the Toronto Argonauts are a very good football team, right? And there's money to be made with them. We'll see, you know, just how high their point spreads start to go. But now they're 6-0 straight up, 6-0 against the spread. We know Edmonton are a terrible football team, and we know BC are very good, right? So BC beat them down again, and the Edmonton Elks set a North American sports franchise history for pro sports. No team has lost 21 straight home games. The longest streak, Babana, was 1953, Major League Baseball. St. Louis. All right, yep. The St. Louis Browns, not even a
not the Cardinals, the other MLB St. Louis, yeah.
There's a lot of, yeah, you know you're going old school. You're talking about the St. Louis Browns, a team that no one's ever heard of before. It's hard to lose 21 consecutive home games, but they did. And not only that, they got shut out at home.
It's a total embarrassment that you can't score 1 point in a CFL game at home when you already were shut out by that team. And I know BC's defense is legit. They're awesome.
That's the first time, Babano, in CFL history, actually, that a team has been shut out twice by the same team in the CFL. And they've been playing CFL football a long time.
Yeah, well over 100 years. So when you're setting CFL history records in a bad way for being the first team to get shut out by the same team in the same season, that's bad. That's historically bad, the Edmonton Elks are. And look, their offense wasn't any better. I see no creativity. And it's not just Cornelius. Cornelius is the easy target because he's the quarterback. And, yeah, he needs to play a whole lot better, and he hasn't played well. The receivers aren't getting open. The O-line is terrible. I think the play calling is absolutely abysmal. And people are asking, well, what's going to happen now? You're winless on the season. You've now lost 21 at home, setting a record. Now you have a bye week. Is something going to happen? Is the shoe finally going to drop? Is there going to be some changes made? I do think they're going to fire McAdoo. It sounds like it. They're going to fire the offensive coordinator. They'll throw him under the bus for everything that's going on. I don't know what kind of tangible change in a positive direction that will lead to, but it's sounding like they're close to maybe making a change in offensive coordinator, and it probably might happen over the bye week.
I think they should make a change at head with the head coach. You can throw the court. Like you said, it's hard to blame a quarterback. You can't just say, it's one guy's fault that they're that bad. It's the coaching staff. Let's just call it out for what it is. Like, to me, and I get it, it's tough to replace people. Plus, Jones makes real money as their coach.
Huge money as coach and GM. And they're already paying guys they fired, coaches and GMs from previous administrations. And they're not making any money because nobody's going to the games. So they're in bad financial ruin right now, Edmonton. So they can't afford to just fire Jones and pay him his salary and then still have to look for someone to replace him and then pay him.
Yeah, but if you lose... You lose 21 straight home games. Somebody has to be replaced, and firing a coordinator isn't good enough. Nobody who knows who the hell the coordinator is anyways. You know what I mean? The face of the franchise is the head coach, and especially a coach that has as much control as he does, it's getting worse, not better. That's the thing. It's not like you can say, you know what? We're losing by 1 point. No, like, it's getting worse exponentially as the season goes on for them right now. And eventually the players are just going to tap out. It's going to be hard for them to step up on a weekly basis. I guess the good news is they have a bye week this week. That's the good news for the Elks and their fans. We got a good week of football in the CFL, though. Thursday night football.
The bad news is who they get off the bye week, Winnipeg.
Yeah, well, we got games this week before that. BC Lions and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Toronto Argonauts and the Calgary Stampeders, Montreal and Hamilton, Ottawa and Saskatchewan. It's a quality week of play next week in the CFL. And, of course, we have NFL, not to go along with the CFL, but we also have NFL preseason, which everybody always gets excited for the first preseason game until after they watch it for about 5 minutes, and they're like, God, this sucks. But we'll break it down more on the other side. Bring it.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Late Night Anchor Benjamin Class. This is Sports Rage. I am Moretzi, Sirius XM, Channel 1 to 5, 9 of the Sports Grid Radio Network. Sunday, Bloody Sunday. Countdown to kickoff is on. NFL preseason set to begin. The New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns. The total is 32.5. The point spread, Cleveland Browns are 2.5-point favorites. Browns are minus 125. First things first, anytime we talk about the first game of the year, people are always going to look at the total. Babano, this is a low number at 32.5. I remember the days when we were lucky enough to get 35.5, maybe even a 36 in this Hall of Fame game. Over the years, it's dropped to like 33.5, 34.5. This year, they're not playing around, man. They've just put a 32.5 up on the board to scare people away from this total. Jets and Browns, Thursday night football. Let's rock. What do you think, Babano?
Yeah, I think we're at the point now where I get it. For years and years, Hall of Fame game at Canton, Ohio, there was automatically betted under at Tom Benson Stadium there. But now we're at the point where 32.5, even in the very first game, and these are, you know, two teams that are going to play their first preseason game ahead of everybody else. So you haven't been in camp as much. You haven't had as many practices to get that cohesion right. But still, 32.5. is very low. I think it's too low for me to bet under. The question would be, could I take a chance with the over in this game? And when I look at these two teams, you know, for Cleveland, you're going to see mostly, you know, the trio of Joshua Dobbs. I don't think you're going to see much, if any, Deshaun Watson, probably zero of him. And if you ask me, Joshua Dobbs will get some playing time. We know he's been around the block, Pittsburgh, among other places. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, the rookie out of UCLA, which, look, I know it's his first time in an NFL training camp, but does have some mobility, dual threat capabilities. And then you'll same thing with Kellen Mond, who's the fourth quarterback right now on the Cleveland Browns depth chart. And then you look at the Jets and what they've got. I think the thing that stands out is obviously you're not going to see Aaron Rodgers, but Robert Saleh has already confirmed that Zach Wilson's going to play and likely start in this game on Thursday. Tim Boyle is going to play. Tim Boyle's been around Detroit, a lot of different organizations for many years. So he's a preseason veteran, I guess you could say, at the quarterback position. Then you have Chris Streveler, our guy, former Winnipeg Blue Bomber quarterback a few years ago, who lit up the preseason, I might add, last year for the Winnipeg Jets as the fourth quarterback option on this team. So there's some quarterbacks that could come into this game, Morenci, and maybe be able to make some plays. So at 32.5, I have some mild interest in the over just because the number's that low, and I don't think the quarterbacks are nearly as bad as you would think.
No, you're right, and that's what you need to identify. When people look at the preseason, just sort of skip right to the fourth string, third string, fifth string, and the bottom of the quarterback depth chart. And also, good thing about Chris Traveler, he's been around the National Football League for years now. He knows how to make a football team, and he also can scramble, right? When the pocket collapses, yep. And because that's the whole thing. These guys are in the game in the second half, and they've got bad offensive linemen. So the more mobile the quarterback is, the better. And the quarterbacks that you just talked about with Bano for the Cleveland Browns are exactly that, right? You talk about a mobile quarterback. We saw what Dorian did at UCLA. So he's going to be able to take off and run the football. Mon can take off and run the football. Yep. They have a healthy backup quarterback battle going on in Cleveland. That's another thing that you want to identify. Backup quarterback battles in the preseason and in preseason games, Babano.
Exactly right. And you're certainly going to see that more. And when you look at the situation here for the Cleveland Browns, I don't think there's a huge backup. Like, this is just more... I don't think there's real backup jobs that are in question here. I think Dobbs is solidified, barring a horrible preseason, as the backup to Deshaun Watson. I think Zach Wilson, obviously, barring a terrible, terrible preseason. Man, if he has a terrible preseason, Jets fans are going to not even want to see him on the sideline.
No, the battle, Bano, for the Browns is between Dorian Thompson-Robinson and Kellen Mond on who
stays.
For
the third spot.
They're not keeping four quarterbacks, but they'll keep three, right? And, you know, maybe practice roster, this and that. Thing with Dorian Thompson-Robinson is, and I'm not one of these guys that wants to make quarterbacks. I'm not one of these guys that tells kids you can't be a quarterback, right? But at the same point in time, Dorian Thompson-Robinson was a wide receiver in high school. He wasn't a quarterback, all right? He converted to quarterback. You know, he lived in Las Vegas. You know, one of the Bishop Gorman kids. He converted to quarterback, so he has played wide receiver, and I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Would he be better off? I guess the bottom line is, where is he going to make more money? And I think he could probably make more money being a wide receiver in the National Football League. But he wants to prove he can be a quarterback, and this is what we're talking about. So he's playing for his career here, Babano, which you want to have, right? You know what I mean? You want to, you know, if the kid can run it in from the 12-yard line, he's going to, right? So, right? He's going to put points on the board any way that he can. Because as you stated, quite frankly, Kellen Mond or Dorian Thompson-Robinson aren't ready to be backup quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, if Deshaun Watson goes down, you can't throw Dorian Thompson-Robinson on the field in week one. So I think you're right about Joshua Dobbs being pretty comfortable with the second-string Jets.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I think for the Jets, the main battle is going to be Boyle and Streveler for the third spot. I don't see how Streveler doesn't win the third spot. Tim Boyle is just, you know, he is what he is. I mean, he's just a pocket passer. He's been around with a bunch of different teams. He's 28 years old now. We've seen him with Detroit. We've seen him with Green Bay for a couple of years. He's back with Aaron Rodgers here, Tim Boyle. They were together in Green Bay for a few seasons back in 2019 and 2020. So maybe unless, to me, Streveler's going to beat Boyle for a roster spot, I would think. Unless Rodgers steps in and says, hey, Tim Boyle's my guy. We got to give him the third quarterback spot on the roster. But I just think Streveler at least can give you that dual threat capability, can run with it. Streveler's not exactly a crisp passer of the football. We know that. But what he does offer is a lot of intangibles, toughness, too. That guy, when he takes a hit, he'll bounce off it. He's a physical running quarterback. And, you know, it's what endeared himself to not only the New York Jets last season, but the fan base, because they were going wild for some of the stuff Chris Streveler was doing in the preseason, led a couple of comeback wins in the preseason. So these are the kind of things you got to look for. These third and fourth string quarterbacks on the depth chart here in the preseason that can come in and make plays and win games and even bring your team from behind, possibly. And certainly Streveler did that multiple times last year.
Ian Camera kicking with us. So as we say to the Cleveland Browns, 2.5-point favorites, money line -125. New York Jets +2.5, money line +105, total 32.5. And I actually agree with Babano's take as he was talking about this total just being a little bit light right now. I mean, you're getting to 32 and a half. We only have to get to 33. It's not that difficult to get to 33. You know, punt return here, an interception there, a fumble there. And if you look at the history of the Hall of Fame game, while it has gone, you know, under more than it's gone over, still, for the most part, it's still recently, it's opened up a little bit. Last year, it was 27-11. The Raiders beat the Jags 27-11 last year. So that's an over right there. The year before, Steelers won 16-3 against the Cowboys. There was no game the year before that due to COVID. We had a 14-10. We've had a 17-16. We've had a 20-18. We've had a 14-3, 17-13, 24-20. So it has gone under more than over, but there has been some overs mixed in there. So speaking of over and unders, I've been telling people over and over, Babano, when betting futures at this time of the year, to really focus on unders because of injuries. And we've already seen it, man. The Seattle Seahawks, man, both their running backs got hurt already. Joe Burrow is hurt already. Jalen Ramsey, Miami Dolphins, out for the year already.
All teams are like the over with their win total, believe it or not. So I'm not thrilled.
Really? Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So it's a good thing you didn't already bet those overs to the win total because these guys are already out. So for me, it's unders only right now. And I think I've been proven right by all these injuries recently. I've been focusing more in on the college football unders as of late than the NFL. But I tell you what, the injuries are already killing it in the NFL early in training camps.
Yeah, they sure are. Now, I want to preface this by saying I it doesn't mean I'm not betting those teams over. You know, it's not like I'm all of a sudden saying for sure I'm not betting the over with Burrow out and Ramsey from Miami and the Seattle situation, but it does temper the enthusiasm. It does make you recalibrate and look things over once again, because I did like all three of those teams, especially Seattle and Miami, because the way I see it, even with the running back injuries for Seattle, asking them to win 9 games to me this year was not asking a lot. Because I think it's San Francisco, Seattle, and then there's two horrible teams in that division, the Cardinals and the Rams, who I don't think are going to be very good this year. I think Seattle showed you, and Geno Smith showed you last year, they're good enough to win 9 football games. They were better last year than a lot of people thought. We're only asking for 9-8. Yeah, the running back injuries are concerning, especially for a team that kind of wants to run the football to give Geno that support. But sometimes, you know what I say, sometimes you can find that next man up. The O-line is the key. If you have a good run-blocking O-line, you could still find running backs to come in there and try to get the job done. So I still think Seattle can get to 9 wins. But you're right, the running back injuries are a concern.
Well, the only positive thing that if you're these teams, you can say, well, it's better that it happens now, right? It's late July. We still have time before the season starts. That's not the Jalen Ramsey situation. But, you know, I get it. The teams have to get ready for the year, but I have to wonder that if in the future you're going to see training camps are even shorter, right? I mean, players are already in shape to begin with. Training camp used to be in the old days, guys. Guys would show up out of shape, right? That was the whole thing. Hey, quite the off season. All right, let's get you into shape for the season. Now guys are already in shape. So you're just basically, I don't know. I actually think, and I'm sure they say, oh, we don't tackle enough from practice and all that, but I guarantee you're going to see teams practice less and less in training camps, less and less, because you're only begging for injury. And I know injuries can happen at any time. But, man, this has been pretty crazy. Now you got the Jonathan Taylor situation in Indianapolis as well.
Yep.
Ian Cameron, we'll catch up with you on the Wicked Wednesday. We'll really get into this week's CFL card, some great games. We'll talk preseason. Thanks for joining us, Babano.
Always good to be with you, Gabe.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Late Night Anger Management Class. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Thanks to Babano for kicking it with us here tonight. So countdown to kickoff is on. We've got Women's World Cup of Soccer, in which we'll get to. Of course, UFC 291 was last night. And Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje threw it down for that BMF belt. And whatever, forget about the BMF belt. It was a kick-ass matchup, and it was an interesting matchup to see them go at it. And, of course, Gaethje kicked him in the head, beat him in the first round. After the fight, Conor McGregor tweeted out, "Justin, I'll slap you around," in which he went on to delete the tweet after the fact. Justin Gaethje was asked about Conor McGregor and the tweet after his great performance against Dustin Poirier, and he said, "I like to fight big fights, so it sounds pretty exciting to me. I'm not going to fight someone on steroids. I've never taken steroids in my life. I never will. I don't want to fight someone that's cheating. I probably shouldn't say that if I want the fight, but that's the truth." He then goes on to say, "I think he's turned me down 6 times, and usually you have to lose to fight him, so I don't know what's going on." Now, it should be noted, Conor McGregor has never failed a PED test within a UFC, but at the same point in time, he also hasn't taken a test in a long time. And that's what one of the holdups is for his return. And people are wondering if he's ever going to fight Michael Chandler. And I'm starting to believe that he actually won't. He's nowhere near ready to fight. He's got to jump in. He's looking for different ways to get in and different loopholes to get thrown back into to avoid the standard procedure to get re-entered into the testing pool. Yet, I don't think he has a big, massive desire. You'll notice Conor only really ever talks on when other people are fighting, right? Like, Conor McGregor never tweets out how he's going to beat somebody up in the middle of the week, right? He never tweets out, like, you know, 1 in the afternoon, you know what I mean? Or 10 in the morning, on a Tuesday morning, how he's going to destroy somebody. No, he usually does it after the fight. He likes to steal other people's spotlight. He thinks, oh, if I say something, everybody's gonna talk about it and look at me. Yet, if Conor was actually, like, in the mix and fighting people, it'd be like, all right, cool. I don't think Conor really wants to fight Gaethje anyways. I thought, you know, listen, Gaethje, it could be deemed slanderous, to be honest. If somebody's never failed a test and you call them a cheater, you could technically be sued for libel for it, but not really, right? In a sense that you'd have to prove that Conor McGregor would have to prove, like, libel lawsuit, you can't just sue somebody because somebody said something about you, even if it's a lie. Like, you could lie about somebody, and you might have to retract it, but, like, a libel lawsuit, it gets kind of, like, not to get too legal about it, but you have to prove that you've lost money because of it. You know what I mean? You have to say, listen, I was called a cheater and I didn't get hired and I didn't get hired because of the fact, or I lost this much money due to this sponsor leaving me because I was called a cheater and they left after. Conor McGregor wouldn't be able to prove that. Conor McGregor, like, he's still making money, right? Like, because of what Justin Gaethje said, did this hurt Conor McGregor's career at all? No. But I'm just stating from a technical standpoint, he hasn't ever failed a test. Very similar to Barry Bonds, actually. Which you could argue is, you could argue that it's unfair to keep somebody out of the Hall of Fame just because you think he took something. Now, we all kind of know he did, sort of, but he didn't fail a test. The whole innocent until proven guilty thing really doesn't exist anymore in our society. As far as McGregor is concerned, listen, man, Gaethje's not the only one to say this. Didn't Joe Rogan say the same thing? He said there's no way that Conor McGregor's not on steroids. I believe Joe Rogan said that on his podcast. So people have said it, and as we stated, if you're going to dodge the testing pool for as long as he has, then, you know, people are going to have questions about it. And also, Gaethje does not throw away this fight by saying this. If anything, maybe it'll really stir Conor up to actually really want to make the fight happen. And quite frankly, Gaethje could make a lot of money fighting Conor, and he would probably beat him as well. I don't know what Conor has left anymore after these years. It's clear Conor McGregor's already peaked as a fighter. Like, it's not like the best is yet to come for him from a fighting perspective. he maximized. I mean, nobody's made more money and done what he's done within the UFC. Is he the greatest fighter ever? No. He's the greatest businessman ever to fight in the UFC. I mean, this proper 12, I've never bought a bottle before, but people obviously are. And he's made a ton of money from that. He's in movies and stuff. Let's just be real. I mean, it's like the Rocky story, right? He's made so much money. We knew this years ago, too. Once he fought Mayweather, there was really not going to be any really going back from that. Right? Once you fight for $40, $50 million, how are you ever going to get up for fighting for $2 million again or $5 million again or whatever? He can get his prop, you know what I mean? Like, there's only so much money he can make in the UFC. He gets to promote his whiskey and stuff, which is a pretty good deal that other people don't get. But at the same point in time, I'm just stating, from the amount of money that he's made and the amount of money that he could make just from his business endeavors, he's obviously going to lose some UFC hunger. And also, time catches up to everybody. You can't not just ever fight and step back up and, you know what I mean, into the octagon or into a boxing ring and be on par with the dudes that are killers. Are they as big from a business perspective as you, Conor? No. But at the same point in time, we see. I've been following the UFC and covering the UFC a long time at the ESN. We've seen time and time again, big names, the company goes on. You know what I mean? Like, they've done a good job with that, the UFC. Somebody told me years ago about that, about like how they said, you notice how the UFC promotes the number, not the names of the fighters, right? Like, they're promoting them, the company, and there's always going to be, like, you always think after, oh, what are they going to do after Ronda Rousey? What are they going to do after this person? What are they going to do after Chuck Liddell? What are they going to do after Tito Ortiz? What are they going to do after George St. Pierre? What are they going to do? What do they do after John Jones? Like, the wheels just keep turning and new stars get developed. And in the older days, too, fight fans sort of like the star stuff. I'm noticing now the modern fight fan, they don't really care, quite frankly. That's the new fight fan, Matthias. And I tell you what, betting has something to do with it. Like, more people are betting than have ever bet on MMA before. Like, in the arena. Everybody has a ticket. Everybody has money on it. So it doesn't have to be the biggest stars, right? It doesn't have to be Conor McGregor fighting for the arena to go crazy. You know, look at the card I was at. It wasn't massive names. The crowd was insane. Look at last night in Utah. They were loud as hell, man. Like, it's rabid. And I'm telling you, it's driven by betting. Right? Like, so people, it's just like bringing in ex-fighters. People don't really care whether they're superstar fighters. Like, older fight fans complain, oh, the cards are diluted. And yeah, you could argue. There's no doubt about it. Right? I mean, they have cards every week now. So you could argue that, you know, whatever is a fight night main event really would have been like the first night on the first fight on a pay-per-view type of deal. But they have so many cards. But as I stated, people don't care. Right, like the cards, if you look, the UFC's been on fire. Their big card in Vegas, the International Fight Week, was a massive success. The energy was through the roof. The fights were crazy. The Vancouver card that they had before that was off the hook. Same thing. They sold it out. Crowd ate it all up. Salt Lake City last night ate it all up. Like, there wasn't an empty seat in the house. And not just not empty seat, but like rabid. We talked about that after UFC 290, whatever was the International Fight Week one. I was like, wow, they've really like developed a new generation of 18 to 30 type of fans. And we see it. You can't deny it. Right. Like, the UFC's just been on fire, like, over the last like 6 months or so. Like, all these cards are all hot and the crowds are eating it up everywhere, Matthias.
They have found a young audience that, like you said, they don't care what the name is. The way that I see it, Gabe, as long as there's a line to the fight, that's all that matters. You know, read some guidelines, do some homework, pick who you're going to bet on, and shoot for the stars. And we see that the UFC's just spitting card after card after card. And you know what? people are ready to watch every single fight, and especially in the Midwest. You know, if you go to, you know, to Utah, you know, if you go to Colorado, you know, I went to that bare knuckle fighting, Gabe, and let me tell you, I remember I told you by the first fight, there was a line out the door to get into the building, and we heard Medich, who won, that was the second fight of the night at UFC 291 this past weekend in Salt Lake City. He said the energy was ecstatic, and he even said he was the second fight of the night, and the building was already packed up. That's rare. That, you know, you don't really see that, you know, the second fight of the night, to have
you
the
wouldn't
whole
see that
already filled up.
Yeah, you wouldn't see that if in Anaheim, right? You wouldn't see that in LA.
You don't see that in Vegas. You don't see, right. You could go to Vegas. The building won't be filled up by the second fight. The hardcores will be there getting their beers and stuff, but the arena is empty. You could literally walk down to the cage if the security's nice to take some pictures, Gabe, for real. Like,
I don't.
In Vegas,
I haven't been to the first fight of the night in like 20 years, type thing, 15, 20 years.
You still wouldn't, Gabe. If you did, you'd be like, what the hell am I doing over here? That's what you'd think.
It's too long. It's exactly. 7 hours.
It's like,
you know what I mean? You want to get there at 5:36 or whatnot. Okay. And I understand people are eager, but that's the whole point. They go to these cities where people are very excited to have this big event there, right? Like Salt Lake City. Not that Salt Lake City is a minor league city, but at the same point in time, you know, this is a big deal, right? A UFC pay-per-view. One thing I say, I swear, man, like, it's not like it's dry in Utah, but it's the same thing at, like, BYU games where it is dry. These Mormons are loud, man. Like, they're freaking loud. They don't need, like, to be wasted and stuff. Like, no, it's true. Like, the BYU crowd is, like, extremely loud. College basketball or college football. The Utah Jazz fans are very rowdy, and it's actually one of the rowdier places in the league. It's hostile. They're always getting into it. Players are always getting into it with fans and stuff. But yeah, no, the crowd was lit. And the crowd's been lit everywhere. Like I said, the UFC just been on fire, man. They go to the Middle East, they eat it up. They go to Canada, Vancouver, they eat it up. Sold out. They go to Salt Lake City, sold out. And the fighters have been delivering as well. So Justin Gaethje, an incredible performance. Dude's a badass, right? The dude's a badass, and we'll see what happens if he fights Charles Oliveira, if he gets a title shot. As you drown. All right, we'll give you some Women's World Cup soccer picks on the other side here. I've already got a piece of Canada +1.5 that I parlayed with the Whitecaps +1.5. I think Canada can win, but I think +0.5 of goals is the best way to go.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Three-minute warning, quick as 100 minutes of Sports Talk Radio. All right, we've got four Women's World Cup soccer matches coming up, including in a couple of minutes, actually. We've got Costa Rica and Zambia, Japan and Spain. As I stated earlier, I want no part of Costa Rica and Zambia. They're both just playing for pride. They've both been eliminated. Japan and Spain are playing for first place in their group. If it ended up a draw, I guess Spain would end up winning because they've scored one more goal than Japan have, but I still expect Spain to win this match. Spain are -120. Japan are +350. The draw is +250. I think Spain do win, though. So I'm going to play Spain at -120. Canada only need a draw to advance. But I think they're going to be playing for the win still, and I think they can win, but I think it's going to be a tough game. Like, it's probably a 2-1 Canada win. It wouldn't shock me if it did end up a draw and it was frantic at the end and Australia's trying to score at the end of the game. I'm taking Canada +0.5 goal, so if it's a draw, we win the bet. If they win, then whatever, I miss out on the +210, but I still cash the ticket anyways. Adriana Leone of Canada, she's in a great spot. and she gets a lot of opportunities just for, because of her position, and she's freaking good as well. So I'm going to take Lyon to have a shot on target, zero over one, just over half a shot on goal on target. It's minus 120. Hutema as well is also a shot on goal. The tall girl, number nine, one of the Canadian strikers, she should have a shot on goal. And I think Lyon can score again, actually. Every tournament, there's always a player on Canada that sort of steps up. I think this one is Lyon's time. And I'm looking for her to score at plus 333. And I also like over 9.5 corner kicks. Ireland and Nigeria, under 2.5. It's a real game for Nigeria. They're hard to score on. This game goes under 2.5. Other than that, you're on your own later.